everyone. I'm Brian Lehrer. It's Monday, February 10th. One of the dynamics in New Hampshire is Joe Biden suddenly on the ropes, right, after his fourth place finish in Iowa. He had been running an above-the-fray campaign as the polling front runner for months, going after Trump, but not much the other Democrats. But now he's made that turn because he feels he has to. So in Friday night's debate, Biden argued that Bernie Sanders, who is polling consistently high, is a political risk at the top of the ticket and for control of Congress, too.
The president wants very much to stick a label on every candidate. We're going to not only have to win this time, we have to bring along the United States Senate. And Bernie's labeled himself, not me, a Democratic socialist. I think that's the label that the president's going to lay on everyone running with Bernie if he's a nominee.
Biden, in the Friday night debate on ABC and New Hampshire's WMUR-TV, here's part of how Sanders fought back at a campaign appearance over the weekend.
And you hear the establishment like, how do we stop Bernie Sanders and his movement? Oh my God, the people are standing up, fighting for justice. How do we stop that? Working people want decent wages, decent trade agreements. People want health care for all. How do we stop it? Well, they ain't gonna stop it.
Sanders with attitude there. So Biden versus Bernie is on. So is Biden versus Buttigieg. Maybe you heard the dueling clips of Biden saying, Mayor Pete, you're not Barack Obama, and Buttigieg saying, no, I'm not, but neither of us is Barack Obama. But it was Buttigieg who probably had the most difficult moment in the Friday night debate, at least to my ear. Moderator Lindsey Davis was questioning him about the increase in marijuana arrests of black residents of South Bend when Buttigieg was mayor, and he really didn't have an answer. We'll pick this up as Lindsey Davis asks a follow-up question.
How do you explain the increase in black arrests in South Bend under your leadership for marijuana possession?
And again, the overall rate was lower.
No, there was an increase.
Rate.
The year before you were in office, it was lower. Once you became in office in 2012, that number went up. In 2018, the last number year that we have record for, that number was still up.
Yeah. And one of the strategies that our community adopted was to target when there were cases where there was gun violence and gang violence, which was slaughtering so many in our community. Burying teenagers, disproportionately black teenagers. We adopted a strategy that said that drug enforcement would be targeted in cases where there was a connection to the most violent group or gang connected to a murder.
So bottom line, yes, the arrests of African Americans for marijuana crimes went up on Buttigieg's watch, and his answer was what it was. Figure out if that was an answer for you. To be fair, he now supports full legalization of marijuana, expungement of past criminal records for cannabis arrests, and even decriminalization of possession of any drug. So just possession. But let's get to Amy Klobuchar. Here is Senator Klobuchar making her case in the debate on Friday night relative to Buttigieg, who has only governed in one small city.
I think we're better off with someone that has the receipts, someone that has actually won big time with Republicans and independents. And I'm the only one up on this stage, you can check it out, that has consistently won in red congressional districts. Not once, not twice, but three times. And when I did it, I didn't just do it for me. I led a ticket. I flipped the state house every single time because I have a way of working with people that I think should be valued here as we look at these candidates. And it's one of the reasons that I got the New York Times endorsement along with Elizabeth, and that I got the endorsements of the three major papers here in New Hampshire, which is the Union Leader, the Seacoast Papers, and the Keene Sentinel. I think that matters. Read those editorials, and you will get a sense of what I'm about.
Amy Klobuchar from Friday night's debate. With us now is Laura Kanoi, who has just gotten off the air from her public radio talk show, The Exchange, which airs weekdays in the 9 a.m. hour statewide on New Hampshire Public Radio. The studios are in the state capital city of Concord. Hi, Laura. Thanks for coming on without even the time to catch your breath from your own show. Happy day before the primary.
Well, thank you. It's really fun to be with you, Brian, and I'm really excited to be with you again tomorrow night.
Absolutely. Should be fun, and we'll be taking calls, as you know, from New Hampshire and all over the country. So, listeners, make a note of that. 7 o'clock tomorrow night. Let me play a short clip, one more, from the Friday night debate on New Hampshire's WMUR TV and nationally on ABC to get us into this. And you tell me if Granite Staters seem to key on this very much over the weekend. It's Joe Biden right at the start.
I took a hit in Iowa, and I'll probably take a hit here. Traditionally, Bernie won by 20 points last time, and usually it's the neighboring senators that do well.
So that was Biden kind of writing off his chances in New Hampshire. Did that make news or make waves up there?
It sure did, Brian. And some supporters of former Vice President Biden were pretty disheartened by this. We heard from one woman who said, look, I was going to spend my whole weekend campaigning for Joe Biden, but forget it now. So it was demoralizing for his supporters. But look, politicians always do this. As you know, Brian, they try to play the expectations game. So perhaps Joe Biden is trying to craft a message saying, look, you know, I don't expect to do that well in New Hampshire, but don't worry, I'll kick it in South Carolina. I might do really well in Nevada. So he's trying to sort of play the expectations game. And I understand that. Candidates often do that. But it was a bit demoralizing for his longtime supporters here. Among them, our beloved former governor, John Lynch.
I'm inviting people to call in and say, if they're for Buttigieg, who seems to be surging right now, why not Klobuchar? And vice versa for Klobuchar supporters. Would you say they're aiming at the same voters in their campaign appeals in New Hampshire?
I absolutely would say they are aiming at the same voters. They're saying, I'm the one that can create that broad coalition of Democrats, moderate Republicans, independents. Both of them made that message at the debate Friday night. You're absolutely right. And this morning I was on the air and just flooded with emails and calls. And we're seeing a little Klobuchar surge now here in New Hampshire, Brian. There was a Boston Globe tracking poll over the weekend. She's up 3 points. I made an effort to talk to a lot of Democratic voters over the weekend. And more than one said, wow, I watched that debate and I think I'm for Amy now. So I think that Klobuchar's momentum going into the final days of the New Hampshire primary will only pull a little bit from Buttigieg.
Interesting. And she mentioned in that clip three New Hampshire newspapers who endorsed her. Do they have a lot of clout?
I'm not sure. I would leave that up to some smart political scientist at the University of New Hampshire. But it certainly doesn't hurt to get those endorsements. And I did talk to one voter who was in between Warren and Klobuchar. This is an older gentleman. Mm-hmm. And he said to me, you know, she did get all those endorsements from the newspapers. So I think that sways it for me to Klobuchar. So maybe among older Democrats, I'm not so sure about younger voters.
Let's go to some of our callers for a while. The question on the table, if you're for Pete Buttigieg as of now, why him and not Amy Klobuchar and vice versa? And we'll start with Nancy in Mercer County, New Jersey. Nancy, you're on WNYC. Thank you so much for calling in today.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. To answer your question, I think the difference for me between Klobuchar and Buttigieg is that Buttigieg is more aspirational. He has much more of a hopeful, forward-thinking position on things, and I just like the way he leads. Klobuchar, she's such a doer, and I respect her immensely, and maybe we should be looking at people who just get things done, but I'm not sure that that's really the role of the president. I think the president really has to be aspirational and pull everybody together in a hopeful and positive way. And I think that's where he tips the scales for me.
Nancy, thank you so much for starting us off in that way. Joy in California. Where in California, Joy? Hi.
Hi. Avila Beach. It's in San Luis Obispo County.
Appreciate you calling in. What are you thinking?
I'm thinking pro Pete, no Amy. Which do you want to hear first?
Oh, pro Pete.
Okay. I like his plan for a glide path to single-payer health care. I've been a fan of Bernie forever and ever, amen, but he's just too radical.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as I don't like Amy, I was surprised and disappointed at how easily she was rattled and buffaloed in the Judge Kavanaugh hearings. We don't need that in a president.
How was she buffaloed? I thought she stood up to Kavanaugh. Really,
he rattled her. I couldn't even. I don't have a TV. I was listening on the radio, and when he pushed back, she choked.
Joy, thank you very much for your call. I appreciate it. Call us again from the San Luis Obispo area. My perception, and I think a lot of people's perception, is that he choked because he had to apologize to her for asking her, what was it, Laura? Do you remember? It was like, do you have a drinking problem? Something like that.
Yikes. And she I don't even know, like, if I want to go there on the radio.
And she, you know, respectfully to him, but stood her ground. And then he came back after a break and apologized to her. Obviously, his drinking was an issue in the confirmation.
I love what that caller said, though, about, and I think she hit it on the head, that, you know, you do hear Amy Klobuchar here in New Hampshire talking about, I've gotten stuff done. I'm tough. I'll stand up. Look at what I did across the aisle. And you do hear former Mayor Buttigieg more saying, let's turn the page. In fact, I think I tracked how many times he said that during the debate, and it was a lot. You know, we need a vision for a new America, sort of that millennial candidate. Mm-hmm. So it's great that people are kind of keying in on those messages.
Yes, aspirational, said that caller. Robin in Bucks County, Pennsylvania, you're on WNYC. Hey, Robin, thanks for calling.
Thank you for having me on the show. I am supporting Amy, and interestingly enough, I think that the Kavanaugh hearings are what kind of brought her onto my radar to counteract what the last caller said. But I had heard Pete on your show, I think it was last January,
right.
And I really, really liked him, and I was supporting him for a couple of months, and then watching the debates for the past couple months, I've been slowly thinking I like Amy a lot more just because she has more experience, and I think she's got a better chance of winning, but that's just my opinion.
Why do you think she would have a better chance, more of a chance of winning?
I think, to be honest, Pete is very aspirational, but the more I listen to him, the more I hear the same thing. And when I listen to her, she seems to be really answering the questions on the debate stage. So she seems to be really quick on her feet. You know, he is too. I mean, they're both mm-hmm. very good. But I guess I just feel, and maybe the way she handled Kavanaugh, which for me actually impressed me a lot, I could see somebody like that handling Trump in a debate.
Is gender at all an issue for you?
I don't think so. Although I said to my husband that I would like to see Amy choose Stacey Abrams as a running mate, and I came to the conclusion, I think in my mind, that it doesn't matter one woman or two. Either you're going to vote for a woman or you're not. You know. So.
Robin, thank you so much. Please call us again. Donna in Manhattan. You're on WNYC. Hi, Donna.
Hi, Brian. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Glad you're on.
I do like Pete, too, but I like Amy better than everyone, actually. And I like her better, well, for the first, as you put in the first clip from the debate, the fact that she's won a purple state 3 times, that she's won Trump districts by significant margins, I think, you know, she's someone who can attract independents and moderate Republicans. But...
which
also,
is what Pete would say about him, too.
Yeah, although he has won 11,000 votes, with all due respect.
Yeah.
I mean, I would like him to run for governor or for the Senate, actually. But I also really like the fact that she's been so effective in the Senate. She's got over 100 bills to her name that she's passed, and she's worked in a bipartisan manner. And I think, given what's gone on in the Senate, I think you need someone who can work with the legislatures in a bipartisan manner.
Donna,
I also really like the fact also that they're both from the Midwest, but mm-hmm. I think that's important for the battleground states.
Donna, thank you so much. I appreciate your call. Just to button up this Pete versus Amy section, Laura, I wonder about gender perceptions and what that last caller was saying, how she'd like to see Pete, who's only gotten 11,000 votes or whatever the actual total was, in South Bend run for governor or run for Senate? Would any 38-year-old mayor of a city of 100,000 think it's her turn to run for president if she was a woman, but Buttigieg thinks it's his? I don't know if you see gender playing up there. The listeners in this little stretch, tiny, unrepresentative sample, didn't bring it up.
Well, I think that's really interesting, and I'm glad you're asking about it. Amy Klobuchar certainly has made that point that, you know, look at all the experience I have, and yet Mayor Buttigieg is ahead of her. I heard from more than one voter this weekend, Brian, about the so-called woman question. People saying, I have no problem with a woman or a gay person, but those voters in the Midwest will never go for it. You know, so I hear a lot of New Hampshire people, not so much that they wouldn't want a woman president, they say they're fine, but they're trying to psych out what the voters in the Midwest will do, which is, you know, in my opinion, kind of problematic. Like, you really don't know those people. You've never met them. You've never talked to them. So how do you really know what they're going to do? But I do hear New Hampshire voters trying to figure out what other voters will do and try and pick the best candidate who they think can defeat Donald Trump.
On the identity question, let me go back to Buttigieg for just one second, because he checks a number of boxes that we haven't mentioned yet. Veteran, gay, whether that's a plus or a minus or a neutral in 2020, I don't know. Christian, kind of an out, you know, on his sleeve Christian, very much trying to distinguish his Christianity from Mike Pence's, for example, who's also from Indiana. How much do those boxes, if you will, seem to matter?
Oh, so interesting. I'm glad you asked, Brian. First of all, New Hampshire has a relatively high percentage of veterans in our population, slightly higher than most other states. So I think that is a plus for Mayor Buttigieg. His references to Christianity and faith, on the other hand, probably don't resonate that much here in the Granite State. We share with Vermont among the lowest church participation of any sort of organized religion. Mm. We in Vermont go back and forth in terms of the percentage of people who adhere to organized religion is very, very, very low. So veterans, that's a plus. The church going, the Christian messages, I think that just kind of washes over people here because, again, people are not heavily religious. You mentioned also Mayor Pete's status as a gay man. New Hampshire was the first state to pass same-sex marriage in a legislative way. So a couple other states went before us, but it was through court cases. Mm-hmm. New Hampshire passed it, you know, the old-fashioned way. We introduce a bill, we vote on it, and we say yes.
Elizabeth Warren, from a state next door, as is Bernie Sanders. Warren was leading for a long time in many polls, but now, according to the polls, not so much. She could still win tomorrow night, of course, as so many Granite Staters are undecided. I'm going to ask you about that in a minute. But how do you see her trajectory to this point?
Well, she's been active here for a long time. You're right, Brian. She's been campaigning the state maybe longer than anybody else, and certainly the campaign is consistent. I know, you know, my neighborhood in Concord, which is a very Democratic town, every weekend there's, you know, little pieces of Warren literature around. She does seem to be fading a little bit just because other candidates seem to be surging, getting more attention because of those debates. But Warren is a steady, energetic, optimistic campaigner. So I would not count her out, but I do see her support being pulled back just a little bit here in the Granite State.
And I do see in the polls that I've read that it looks like there are still lots of undecideds. And here we are the day before. How much are Granite Staters notoriously late deciders?
Oh, my gosh. I'm so glad you asked me this question, because a UNH poll released just Saturday, so we're talking 2 days ago, showed fully 19% of New Hampshire voters undecided, Brian, undecided, 19%, and another 30% leaning toward a candidate, but leaning does not mean absolutely yes, going to vote for. So you add it up, that's almost half of New Hampshire voters not completely 100% committed. That's why we had such a crazy weekend here in New Hampshire, because these last-minute efforts, you may think, why are they bothering? It is absolutely worth the effort to spend the last couple days before the New Hampshire primary in New Hampshire, doing as much as possible, given that you have all these voters who are undecided or leaning but could be convinced the other way.
Is New Hampshire a winner-take-all state? Because for all the breathlessness about Iowa and the problems there, Sanders and Buttigieg about tied for first. They're going to do a recount, obviously, because of the app problems, at least in some areas, it looks like. But Sanders and Buttigieg are coming out with about the same number of delegates for the convention. Is New Hampshire like that, too?
You know, Brian, I'm going to have to look that up. I have been so focused on, like, tracking these candidates, talking to as many voters as possible, you know, seeing all the flux and flow in the polling and this Buttigieg surge and now this possible Klobuchar surge and this steady support for Sanders.
We'll figure that out.
I'm going to have to work on that delegate question. It's a good one.
And also, New Hampshire is a swing state, as I don't have to tell you, won by Clinton in 2016. But barely, and Trump is targeting it. He hopes to flip, from what I've read, primarily New Hampshire and Minnesota as two states that he hopes he can get into his column in case he loses a few. Are there any indications that he's more popular there today than he was in 2016?
Well, he's certainly doing well. He had, as you know, a good week. He had the impeachment acquittal. He had his State of the Union, the mess in Iowa. He was able to sort of poke fun at that. And you're absolutely right. New Hampshire is a very purple state, a mix of red and blue. We've got four electoral college votes. And last time around in 2016, all the candidates left, and we kind of said, phew, we can catch our breath from all this national stuff. And then pretty quickly thereafter, all the national stuff came back because there was a fierce contest for our four electoral votes. You're absolutely right.
I see Trump is also having a New Hampshire rally tonight. Is he just trolling the Democrats?
Well, this is common, actually. We saw Bill Clinton do this years back. This is my seventh New Hampshire primary, Brian. Mm. So we have seen this before when there's not a very active primary for the incumbent president. And I say that because former Massachusetts Governor William Weld is running in a Republican primary against President Trump. So I do want to acknowledge that. But when an incumbent president is pretty much certain of winning his primary, they do often send up surrogates the week or so before, just to remind people, hey, we're part of the conversation, we're part of the debate. Other presidents have done this too. It's not unusual that President Trump is doing this.
Laura Kanoy, host of The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio, she and I will be co-hosting a national call-in tomorrow night in the 7 o'clock hour as they get ready to they'll be casting the votes all day. It's not like Iowa. They'll be ready to count the votes in New Hampshire after that. And it's going to be a lot of fun, I think, Laura. I know we'll be on both in New Hampshire and around the country. Interesting, even this morning, to see how far and wide people were calling in from with opinions. So we'll get New Hampshire voters to talk to the rest of the country, and we'll get the rest of the country to talk to New Hampshire voters tomorrow night.
Well, thank you for having me today, Brian, and we'll have fun tomorrow night.
And listeners, we want to invite you in on the conversation, too. If you've got a question about a national news item, whether it's something you want to know about the election or the Trump administration or anything else you think might fall under the national politics umbrella, give us a call and leave us a message with your name, where you're calling from, and your question. We'll collect those and keep them in our pocket for when I'm speaking with someone who can give you a good answer. The number is 844-745-TALK. That's 844-745-8255, 844-745-TALK. See you tomorrow.